Hearing on House Bill 2221. Janet, would you give us an explanation of the bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair, thank you. Good morning, members. House Bill 2221 would increase fees that are currently charged for screening and monitoring of persons convicted of driving under the influence of intoxicants, and also for diagnostic assessment and monitoring of persons entering diversion agreements. Current law requires persons convicted of DUII to go through a screening process for determining placement in treatment programs. The agency or organization, which may be a private or public agency that performs a screening interview, is also required by the statute to monitor and report on the progress of the individual throughout their treatment. The statute requires the individual currently to pay a $90 fee to cover the screening and monitoring costs. House Bill 2221 would increase the fee from current 90 to $130. The $90 fee was set in 1992 when it was for screening only. In 1999, the monitoring requirement was added, but the fee was not changed. According to the providers that you'll be hearing from, the $90 fee does not cover their current costs. The first section of the bill, Section 1, is the conviction section, and the fee change is in line 11. And Section 2 of the bill covers the diversion agreement portion. The diagnostic fee change is in line 5 on page 2 of the bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. Could I have Gretchen McKenzie, Teresa Douglas, and Serena Cruz come forward, please? Good morning, ladies.
Good morning.
Thank you for coming, and you can start your testimony in whatever order you'd like to.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Gretchen McKenzie. I'm the legislative analyst for the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUII, and I'd like to introduce Teresa Douglas, who is a member of the Governor's Advisory Committee on DUII and also a alcohol and drug evaluation specialist.
Thank you, pal.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I wanted to provide some information for you about the day-to-day duties of an evaluation specialist. I've been an evaluation specialist since 1984, and our function is basically multitasking. We are the liaison between the treatment program, the courts, and the client. And we do an initial screening to gather information, determine special treatment needs, and kind of get an idea of what the person, what program would fit the person the best. We also have access to all of the treatment programs that are statewide. We also handle folks that live out of state and get DUIs here in our state. And we do an initial screening and refer them to the treatment in their state. And we provide the same monitoring and also reports to the court. Monitoring is very involved. We're required to get feedback from the treatment program on a regular basis. My staff is very dedicated to that. We have a large caseload. I work out of Clackamas County, and my diversion caseload runs about 1,400 to 1,600 cases at any one time. And we also do all of the convictions, and the caseload for the probations on DUIs runs about 600 to 700. So we do a lot of filing. We do a lot of contact with the treatment agencies, requesting written feedback. I also do consultation with the treatment programs to make sure that the client's getting the right type of treatment, also assist them in their treatment plans. And then we do a lot of intervention. A lot of times the clients may not want to comply. A lot of times they don't want to stop using and stop drinking. And so we try to intervene for the client to motivate them to comply. And we have several methods to do that. We send outreach letters. We make phone calls. We tell them, you know, we'll re-refer you to the program and you'll be on strict compliance, meaning you have to comply with everything, or the end result is you go back to court. And that is kind of our last effort to get them to comply, to send them back to court, notify the judge what they're doing, and a lot of times the judge will give them a good talking to and send them back, and we'll try it again. And if that doesn't work, then at that point they will terminate the diversion and resume the prosecution of the DUI. We also provide the same kind of monitoring for the convictions. In our county, if they're on a formal probation, the probation officer does the day-to-day monitoring and a lot of times does the intervention, but we have to keep track of their treatment. And so we keep a file on those folks, we get a copy of the feedback from the program, and we make sure that the probation officer is receiving that information. If they're on bench probation, then I have to monitor them just like I would a diversion, and notify the court if there's problems. My staff works extremely hard. I have two full-time clerical and myself and two part-time evaluators. We're barely able to keep up with the state's requirements for our feedback. They take a lot of lip from these people. A lot of them are not happy to be there. They don't think they've done anything wrong. And so it's quite a bit of work. And luckily I have a very dedicated staff. I would like to conclude by saying that the evaluation specialist is really essential to the DUI system. We are the one that makes sure that these clients don't fall through the cracks. We make sure their treatment requirements are done. We make sure that their court requirements are met. And we really provide an essential service. I'd also like to emphasize that this will not impact any county or state budgets. This is a fee that is directly user paid. So only the people that are involved in DUI will be paying this fee. I would appreciate your support for this bill. And I would also ask that if it's possible that this bill be effective upon passage. Thank you.
Thank you. Representing Mabry.
I just heard you mention if the person happens to be on bench probation.
Yes.
That's being used considerably in Multnomah County. My understanding is that's a tool in the toolbox, but it's not really an effective tool. Is that being used extensively in Multnomah County?
Ms. Cruz will have to speak for Multnomah County. I know in Clackamas County.
I'm sorry, I was looking at
that. In Clackamas County, it's only used for folks that live out of state because the probation officers don't have full control of them. And so it's not used that much in Clackamas County.
Okay. Any other questions?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Will this increase cover the cost of your service, or is there still an unfunded piece of it?
For me, because I'm a private agency, I don't have a lot of the overhead and administrative costs. The evaluators are still under the county. It's questionable. For myself, I kind of did an internal study, and it's running about $125 to $130 per client for a private agency.
Mr. Chair, is it possible for us to have those numbers, the internal study that you talked about? See, you talk about the need, but I don't see any how much it costs for staff and everything and the offsetting income that you have. It'd be nice to have those.
I believe Multnomah County did a more extensive study. I just kind of did an informal study, keeping track of how many hours we put in on a case, that type of thing. So I don't have anything really in writing, but Multnomah County, I believe, does.
I mean, we're talking about a sizable increase, and I'd like to... Oh, excuse me, Mr. Chair. We're talking about a fairly sizable increase, and I'd like to be sure it's justified.
Mr. Chair, thank you. You talk about out-of-state people that you're handling. How about illegal aliens? You run into some of that. How do you handle them the same way, or what happens there?
Yes, one of my part-time evaluators is Hispanic, and so she sees all of the Hispanic clients. And we don't know who's illegal and who's not.
Okay. Are they, when you have them, they already have a conviction? I mean, they're convicted of something, or?
Or they're on diversion, so they're diverted out of the court system.
Because I understand, one more follow-up. I understand from the INS, they won't send back illegals unless they're convicted. So would that conviction play a role in there at all, or a DUI?
That's a good question. I don't think I've ever had anyone reported as being deported, but I know that we have them on probation caseloads.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Serena, would you like to give your testimony?
Are you, Gretchen? Okay, great. Well, good morning, Chair Brown and members of the committee. I am Multnomah County Commissioner Serena Cruz, and I'm very honored to be here to speak on behalf of and give strong support to House Bill 2221. This measure is a very key part of the county's legislative agenda, and I'll give you the reasons why it's very important to us at the county level, and I want to convey our board's full support of this bill. House Bill 2221 increases the driving while under the influence intoxicants assessment fee. And I've provided you a fact sheet that you've got on the importance of this bill to our county. I'll briefly highlight a few of the key elements of the bill and talk to you about why it's going to matter so much. Every day there are 9 DUI arrests in Multnomah County. Every single day. Our cost analysis, and I'd be happy to get you that cost analysis, Representative Gilman, our cost analysis is that we spend $154.70 on every new client, and we're only charging, because all that we can charge, is $90 a client. House Bill 2221 provides a reasonable and modest increase to meet today's assessment costs. If a client can't pay, our DUI evaluation program follows the county program that no person is denied service based on ability to pay. In the past year and a half, roughly 1 out of every 5 clients received a waiver from inability to pay. For the past 13 years, Multnomah County's general funds, our local taxpayers, have picked up the difference between the state allocation and the real costs of this program. The county's also relied on alcohol and drug block grant funds from the state of Oregon and federal Target City project grant dollars. The DUI evaluation program is effective. We've also done research on the program. Based on a February 2001 Multnomah County Auditor's Report, 76% to 78% of DUI offenders successfully complete treatment. On behalf of the Board of County Commissioners, I respectfully urge you to pass House Bill 2221. Thank you for your time on this very important matter, and I'd be really happy to answer any questions. And would you like me to start, Representative Mabry, with your bench warrant? Okay. We do use bench warrant, in particular for repeat DUI offenders. Judge Baker uses bench probation as a very important tool in her toolkit. Right now, the reason she's able to continue running that program despite our loss of local monies is because she has all on her own procured federal grant dollars. Once those federal grant dollars run out, she will not be able to use that effective portion of the program. We also, in Multnomah County, cut the general fund component as we are facing incredibly tight, we have $15.5 million mid-year rebalance and an additional $22 to $27 million local dollar lost that we're going to have to incur by the end of the year. This is one of those programs that we are going to cut, which will affect the public safety of our community.
Thank you. Representative Greenlight.
Welcome, Commissioner Cruz.
Good morning, Representative.
Sorry, I was downstairs testifying myself on another transportation matter. I wonder why, if the true cost is $150, we're talking about $130. I mean, I wonder why you didn't ask for the ability to charge up to the true cost, since most of these costs are paid for by the individual as a way of staying out of the slammer.
Representative Greenlink, that's a great question, and I can't say that I was involved in setting the cost, but certainly flexibility, whether it was just with Multnomah County or was across the state, would be greatly appreciated. Whatever the state doesn't contribute does affect our our local budget if we are to continue to provide services, since we are backfilling what should be a client-funded program. So it would be appreciated if the committee believed it would raise that to the level of the cost.
If I could follow up, sir. You said whatever the state contributes. This isn't a matter of the state contributing anything. This is a matter of simply allowing you to charge individuals the true cost.
Thank you, Representative Greenlick. You are absolutely correct. Whatever the state allows us to charge the individuals is what will go directly to the program, and we have been, as I suggested, backfilling the state the allowed amount for many, many years. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And so, Commissioner, if I understand it right, if the private contractor has been charging $90 and you have been paying some of that fee above the $90, then up to $130.
We directly fund about $250,000 a year, which was cut in our mid-year rebalance.
Okay, I understand. Any other questions?
Mr. Chair, yeah, why 130? Why 130 in Clackamas County and why 154 in Portland?
I'd be very glad, Representative Zahner, to hand you our financial analysis. I don't know why other counties' costs are lower, if only that it's that they're not government employees and they're not paying them wages and benefits. And I don't know that that's a reasonable reason to suggest we should have to pay that difference in Multnomah County, since it's the client who is really what we're trying to allocate, are these costs out to the client. But again, I'd be very happy to provide the committee with our financial analysis about why these costs are higher in Multnomah County. And please know that given the financial restraints, I've served on the County Commission for over 4 years now. In the last 2 years, we have gone under four different times of budget cutbacks. I believe we have looked for every opportunity that we can to cut costs. There are costs that are what they are, despite our best efforts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Why is it that the fee is set by statute? And I don't know what the history of this is, but it's a private contractor providing the service. Why is there controlled by statute?
It's a good question, Representative Brown. I'm not able to answer that one. Maybe you guys can.
Representative Brown, I think that's what the initial statute, the way that it was formed, so that it would be uniform statewide. So there wouldn't be differences from county to county, that it would be a uniform fee.
Thank you. Representative Mabry.
Well, we heard from Commissioner Cruz, and thank you, but we didn't hear from the others. Does the $130 come closer to covering the true cost than it does in Multnomah County and in other counties, or did we just grab an arbitrary number of $130 and say that's better than nothing?
Representative Mabry, I believe that the initial $130 was kind of what was discussed between Clackamas and Multnomah County, and that was the initial numbers that we came up with. I think Multnomah County then went back and did a more in-depth study, and I believe $130 is kind of the statewide average. A lot of the evaluators are private agencies, and so we don't have the government overhead that some of the county agencies would have.
Sure, may I ask another question? My understanding of this, Commissioner Cruz, is that these people are being assessed. I mean, there are three parts to this bill. They're being assessed, right. And then as a result of that assessment, they're then being put into a treatment program. The extent to which they're financially able, they pay the full cost of that treatment program as well.
Right.
Is that right? Which is far more than this. So that.
Oh, no, we're only allowed to charge $90.
For the assessment,
right.
But for the treatment program that they're referred to, they pay the full cost of that treatment program.
That is a good question, and I would have to go back and ask that, Representative Greenlick. I'll get that to you.
I'll testify to that. And not from my personal experience.
Too late.
Any other questions? None. Thank you, ladies, for being here this morning. Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you.
Yeah. Go ahead, Anna.
Mr. Chair and members, talking in the back of the room to the ODOT staff, the $130 was arrived at by surveying programs and coming up with this average amount of the cost.
That was the... Is there anyone else that wanted to testify on this bill? Not close the public hearing and open the work session.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Greenland.
If I may, you notice the way that the current bill is, the things the client has to do is to complete the screening, pay directly to the agency for the screening, complete the treatment program, pay for the treatment program, and there's no mention of a limit on the payment for the treatment programs. In fact, from my experience working with the treatment folks, that the people that are diverted just pay what the usual cost is, and it varies from treatment program to treatment program. I don't understand why having a dollar amount is useful in the statute, and I would just suggest we think about amending this to say pay the true cost of the screening interview. It could pay directly to the agency or organization conducting the screening interview, a fee covering the cost of that interview would seem to me what this ought to say. I mean, it seems odd setting a number in a statute. We'll have inflation again, and 4 years from now we'll be back saying it should be $153. I mean,
if what I heard the witnesses testifying to was that they wanted uniformity statewide.
But there's not uniformity in the cost of the treatment program that they go into. I mean, it seems odd to have uniformity at this point in the statute, and I mean, it's very clear that the private agency in Clackamas County would charge $128. It sounds like that's their charge, and that's good. And the wherever it is throughout the state would charge what it is. I'm not sure why uniformity in the assessment makes sense when there's no uniformity in the big cost. The big cost is what they pay for going through the 8 weeks of treatment or whatever that treatment is.
Is there any other comment?
Mr. Chair, thank you. I have a couple questions, and as I was processing what he was saying, I'm trying to figure it out. But the other one was the testimony mentioned, I would guess, an emergency clause, and I don't know whether that's something that this committee is interested in putting into this bill or not.
Yeah, as it is now, it would not take effect.
Right.
I don't see any. Is there any, Janet?
No, Mr. Chair, the bill would take effect January 1st, 2004, as written.
What's the feeling of the committee?
I'd certainly argue for an emergency clause. I mean, the county governments are bleeding, and if they're having to pay this, that should be paid by individuals rather than by the government, I'd certainly.
I did remember my other question that kind of addressed what you were saying, was that this increase is not necessarily a cost of living or, you know, that type inflation increase. It was that more duties had been added to this treatment or this assessment in 99, and no additional funding had been added. And I think this is more to address that than any inflation factor. So, I mean, that would be my comment to that.
Okay.
Can I propose an amendment, two amendments to this?
Yeah. What I'll do is we'll hold this over to a future meeting and close the work session and give you people some opportunities to draft some amendments you prefer to. And so we're closed with that. Now to that one. Let's see.
We have the amendment now.
2038. Okay. I think what I'll do now is we'll go a little out of order, and we'll take people that wanted to testify on 2384 aren't here, and so we'll move to House Bill 20, open a public hearing, and possible work session on 2384.
No.
2038.
Yeah, right.
Whatever.
We'll open the public hearing on 2038. I need to get these glasses checked. Blame it on there. Okay, could have Jim Bonwatis and come forward, please. Janet, will you give us an explanation of what's taking place here?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The original House Bill 2038 that you have at your place today adds market development, education, and outreach as eligible activities for funding from the waste tire recycling account administered by the Department of Environmental Quality. And the background on my staff measure summary talks about why the program was instituted in 1987. There's a dollar fee on tires that were sold up until 1992, and the fund generated money for the tire recycling program, developing markets, and markets were developed not by use of the fee, but for tire pile cleanup, and progress was made. So that's described in the background. You also have at your place a report from the Interim Committee on Tire Recycling, and they recommended the funds be expanded for use. Mr. Botwinis and is going to be talking about an amendment that we just received this morning, so I will be passing that out. And this would is described as replacing the original bill and transferring funds from the recycling account, some of the remaining funds, to the Department of State Police for this current biennium. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Janet. The my intent this morning is to do what you'd consider a gut and stuff. Actually, the original intent of the bill is a good intention. It's using the dollars that existed there from a fund that was started back in the early 90s to clean up junk tire piles, and would develop a market development and education outreach with dealing with junk tires. But given the financial crisis that we find ourselves in, the state of Oregon, and the severe need for additional funds to keep troopers on the road, I felt that this was an appropriate step to take at this time. And, with that, we'll start the testimony with Jim. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jim Botwinis. I'm the president of the Oregon State Police Officers Association. First off, Mr. Chair, I'd like to commend you for finding this money and bringing it forward as a proposal to recall some troopers back to the road. I don't think that there's probably a legislator in this building that doesn't understand the significant impact that just occurred to the department by laying off 286 Oregon State Police employees, 129 of those being troopers. Just to give you some minor examples of things that will not occur as a result of 129 fewer troopers, we anticipate that it's about a 30% reduction in our patrol force. We anticipate about 2,000 fewer DUI arrests, 4,400 fewer truck inspections, 7,200 fewer crashes responded to, 1,500 fewer warrant arrests, and 3,300 fewer criminal arrests. That's a lot of work that's being done by that was being done by those 129 people that will not be getting done. As I understand your proposal, it has allocated $625,000 for the Oregon State Police Patrol positions for the remainder of this biennium. In checking with Department of State Police, that dollar effective March 1, if that's the effective date, would recall 63 troopers back to the street for the remainder of this biennium. Obviously, from our perspective, we think that that's a wise investment at this point rather than investing many millions of more dollars come July 1 to rehire and retrain people. We're not basically the same as other agencies that require education or they have the experience to come in law enforcement. You spend lots of money training people to get them where they need to be to enforce the laws of our state and uphold the Constitution of our state and our country. Since we've been removed from ODOT funding, our patrol services division has gone from 650 to roughly 225 today. And as I gave you some of the previous numbers, it certainly tells you that Oregonians are not going to be able to get the service that they've come to expect from OSP over the years, over our 72-year history, quite frankly. To compound this problem, from our perspective, the fewer troopers we have out there, the greater risk we put the troopers who are out there working on the road. We put them at greater risk. Before we laid off the 129 troopers, we looked at the population ratios for the four surrounding states. We had one trooper for every 10,008 residents. And we went to one trooper for every 13,795 residents by laying off the 129 troopers. The highest state of the four that surround us, Washington, Idaho, Nevada, and California, Idaho has the worst ratio of one trooper for every 9,243 residents. So we were already higher than the four states surrounding us before we did the layoffs. They, like Oregon, are all suffering economic problems. Three of those states are hiring, and one of them is in a freeze right now. So I guess what we're saying is we don't think that the 129 should have occurred in the first place. So obviously, it goes without saying that we're going to support the bill, and we would respectfully ask that the committee for their support. I guess I want to put in one other piece in here as well. Everybody is aware that on Friday, Homeland Security Office upgraded the alert from yellow to orange, and our department is heavily involved in Homeland Security. This just does not seem like a good time that we do not have the public safety we need out here to take care of our folks. If I can answer any questions for you, I'll be happy to do so. Thank you.
What does it cost to retrain one officer if you hire a new officer and put him, to get him out on the road or get them out on the road?
Mr. Chair, we've been looking at the numbers, working with the department, trying to come down with a bottom line, fine line number, and we're not there yet. I use one number of about 106,000 for the first 12 months. If you're talking specifically training only, you eliminate their salary, et cetera, for the first 12 months, it's about $50,000 to $60,000 to get them trained up. They're in school for 16 weeks. They're with a coach for roughly 3 months. They will go back to school. There is just intensive training the first 12 months of their career.
And so if we keep this many troopers on the road now, if they were to be rehired, should the layoffs stay in place, it would be a pretty significant training fee involved in putting them new troopers act out next biennium, right?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. Our assessment probably is, we know we've already lost some troopers to other agencies already since the layoffs occurred, and that is going to continue. There's a lot of agencies internally and externally that are hiring law enforcement agencies right now, and they're certainly going to snatch up our people with all the training and dollars that the state of Oregon has expended getting them there. Reduces their expenses.
Thank you. Yeah. Representative's honor, and then Representative Mabry.
Thank you, Chair Brown. Did some of these officers retire? Have you retired some out? Or,
Mr. Chair, Representative's honor, our folks are retiring routinely, basically as they're eligible to retire. We have a very small pool of people who are beyond the retirement age, but most of those who are eligible to retire do, in fact, retire.
Okay. Follow-up?
Follow-up.
Did you cut any administrative personnel?
Mr. Chair, Representative's honor, my understanding is that the department has a plan in place to reduce its administration at some point. We're not sure when that's going to happen. I think it's premised on there's a couple of these bills that are out here, and we want to see if we get any people back and then reconfigure that. But, yes, my understanding is there will be reductions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mabry.
My understanding of this proposal as amended would infuse a one-time shot of money back into the program. not an ongoing source of dollars. Bill that Karen Minnis proposed last week that has some momentum would add back, I think the number is 40 troopers and some forensic people. This would add another 63, which would bring it of 129. This would make the layoff actually only 26 people. My concern. Or my question, not concern. We need to find, a source of revenue that can effectively take OSP out of, give them a dedicated source of funding and take them out of that political arena of going up and down. I think that's unconscionable. But my question in this regard is if Karen's bill passes, and I suspect it very well will, and we do this, we've restored 103 people. But the governor's proposed budget for next year only has funding levels for 40 of those people. And so if we approved that budget, we would find ourselves back in that same cycle of reducing it down again next year. And I guess, you know, my logical mind says if we're going to go through this process, then why do it now? And I don't want to get the misunderstanding. I really think we need to increase troopers, not lay them off. So, you know, what have we accomplished here? That's a convoluted question that you could just run with, but help me with it if you understood it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mabry, a very good question, quite frankly. And I put a lot of thought into it, anticipating that I probably would get asked this question. It's a very difficult issue for the legislators, quite frankly, in trying to determine where funding priorities are going to be. We are working with legislators in this building now, working on a dedicated funding stream for OSP for the 03-05 biennium, and are hopeful that we can actually make something occur this time around to take care of that issue. However, if that does not occur, and the Oregon State Police has to remain within the general fund, I guess that I would argue with anybody that I don't know of much of anything that deserves more importance on a scale of where money is going to be expended than the safety of the citizens of our state and the visitors that come to our state. So, yes, the people we're putting back on board with Representative Brown's bill is more than what the governor has in his recommended budget. At the same time, we would hope that those dollars are going to be found in the 03-05 general fund dollars as one of the highest priorities of things that need to be funded.
So, follow up? Well, just from my clarification, this buys us time to work on the other issue of funding.
Representative Brown, our Chair and Representative Mabry, yes. It gives us time to work through the process and hopefully come up with some solutions by July 103.
Thank you.
Representative Breyer.
Yes. And I don't want to put words in the Speaker's mouth, but from what I understand, the bill that she has had drafted does not have a funding mechanism in it for the 40 troopers. This is the funding mechanism for her additional troopers in the bill. And I don't know if you know that or if maybe you can clarify that. But my question is, if we were to, and not having anyone here testifying about the tire recycling count, maybe we will have, and the necessity for it, if we were to reduce this, because it would sound to me like it would only take about $400,000 to keep the 40 troopers on that the governor has added in his budget, that would leave some money, at least, in this account in case there was a need for it. My understanding is there's some issues in regard to the West Nile virus that might be out there that they could be looking at. So, I mean, that was kind of to clarify that I think this is the funding source for the state troopers that will be kept on.
For the 40.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, that's not my understanding. Representative Minnis's bill has $15.5 million in it, of which $1.2 million goes to the Oregon State Police to rehire 40 troopers and roughly 40 scientists. This bill is in addition or on top of those 40 troopers and 40 scientists.
This, just for clarification, this bill does have a referral to Ways and Means, and they will work their magic on it, I'm sure, when it gets to there. Representative Greenland.
Sir, perhaps when we get into work session, I mean, I just have some general questions similar to what the Vice Chair Byers just expressed about both of the issues she raised. So I think that's not a question of this witness, I suppose.
Okay. Any other questions, Jim? Thank you, sir, for being here this morning. Bob Dengo, please.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bob Danko with the Department of Environmental Quality. I just thought I'd take a moment or two of the committee's time to talk about the account that is, we're talking about today, what we've used it for in the past, and what we have planned to use it for in the future. The administrator mentioned 1987 when the original waste tire law was passed. I was representing the department at that time, sitting at a table just like this, talking about the issue then. This is one of the state's success stories, actually. In 1987, the legislature instituted a dollar per tire fee to clean up some big waste tire piles around the state and to make sure that tires didn't become a problem again. And the departments supported and actually carried the bill that that repealed that dollar per tire fee in 1991 because the job got done. And we cleaned up the major tire piles that were the problems, and we had a pretty significant balance in this account to use it in that manner. And in 1991, the legislature gave us a very clear marching orders to very cautiously use this account because at that time everybody recognized there wasn't going to be any more money going into it. So our marching orders were cautiously use that account to make sure tires did not become a problem in the state. The one pager that I handed out to you shows how we've used that money. From the period of 1995 to 1999, we worked with local governments on what we call amnesty days for tires, trying to make sure that tires did not start mounting up on farms and back roads and in people's backyards. And so we worked with the local governments to, you know, provide collection of have tires collected and managed, you know, to keep them out of just building up the environment. In 1999, the balance of the account was getting low enough where we were a little concerned that we wouldn't have enough money to address bigger tire pile cleanup, so we switched over, and then from then till now, we've been using that money to clean up tire piles, you know, in the 10 or 20,000 tire range, significant piles, nothing like there were in the late 80s, but still piles that shouldn't be out there sitting in the environment. So this account is sort of like the safety net for tires, so to speak. If there's a pile out there, somebody abandoned some property, you know, somebody's bankrupt, you know, somebody dumps loads of tires, whatever, this money's used for that. And that's how we've used it today. Today there's, you know, approximately $650,000 in this account. Like I said, we've been using it very cautiously to use it for you know, tire management. What we have planned, we've been talking to a couple counties and we planned on using this money with many of the counties in association with trying to combat West Nile virus. As you know, tires are perfect habitat for mosquitoes, stagnant water and warm temperatures. And so what we've been talking to the counties about again is to do a major tire amnesty drive later this spring to clean up these tires that are sitting out there in piles. So we could spend what we would have spent, perhaps a third to a half of the $650,000 on this statewide amnesty West Nile virus thing. And of course, we were hoping to be able to leave some of the money in the account again to, like I said, big problems come along, there'd be a little money there to help out either local governments or somebody who's gone bankrupt. Mr. Chair, that's the background I just wanted to give on how we've used the money and what we're planning to do with it.
I don't see anywhere in the bill, the original bill, it says anything about West Nile virus.
No, you're right, Mr. Chair. That is something that we, in managing, trying to keep tires out of the environment, which are marching orders under the law to manage the disposal of the tires and to keep them from causing problems, that's something that we, and in talking to local governments, there's a need for, and that's why we were going that direction.
I see. At the time that the scrap tire bill was in 1987, I believe you said.
You're right.
There was some other legislation that really toughened up the laws regarding who could have junk tires and how you could transport junk tires. And so wouldn't the importance of that be tied to being able to have someone there to enforce those laws?
Mr. Chair, you're right. That was all in one comprehensive tire bill. That was just part of it. Yeah, the tire bill in 87 did several things. Besides putting the dollar per tire on new tires being sold, it established a system where we regulate the storage of tires. So if somebody wants to accumulate lots of tires, they have to get a permit from us to do it. And what we care about is what we call financial assurance. We want to make sure that who's ever accumulating a giant pile of tires have the resources to clean it up if the business that they're collecting for doesn't make it. And so that was really the purpose of the law. There's also some regulations on who can carry bulk loads of tires, for instance. And as you know, Mr. Chair, we took into consideration tire dealers. They can accumulate, I believe, 1,000 or 1,500 tires on site, where anybody else needs a permit to accumulate more than, I think, 200 or 300. So back then, we took into account the existing situation, who was doing the tire businesses and so on. But the whole intent was to keep the tires from becoming a problem.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Zellner.
How do you dispose of the tires when you get them?
For these tire cleanups? That's a good question, Mr. Chair, Representative Zellner. Right now, the cost of disposing of tires, in fact, the 1987 law banned the disposal of tires, whole tires. However, it allows the disposal of chip tires. There's a purpose of that in 87. Chip tires were going for energy recovery. And so it was assumed that if you required the tires to be chipped, they would go to energy recovery or another use, and they wouldn't be disposed. Well, what has happened over the years is that the cost of going to energy recovery or the cost of going to other recycling is a lot more than the cost of chipping the tires and burying them. So right now, almost a vast majority of the tires in the state are chipped, according to law, but then they go to land disposal instead of going to a better use. Our tires, the ones we clean up, they do get chipped, and they probably go to land disposal.
Hey, follow up. What state do they go to? I mean, do we ship them in our
actually,
state?
Actually, Chair Representative Zellner, we are a big importer of tires for disposal. Washington has tighter laws on disposal of tires than we do because we allow the disposal of chip tires. So actually, a lot of tires from Washington come to Oregon for disposal. So we're a net importer.
One final question.
Follow up.
I understand in McMinnville there's a place that takes old tires, and they actually pay to take tires, and they recycle them. Well, they have a need for them, and they don't get enough tires.
Right.
So I'm wondering if there's a place in McMinnville that can't get enough tires, and we're up to our armpits in tires over here. Maybe we ought to figure out how to utilize that facility.
Mr. Chair, Representative Zellner, yes, and our people have worked with that facility in McMinnville. They take crumb rubber and turn it into, you know, recycled products out of tires, which is great. Actually, they import a lot of crumb rubber from British Columbia and Canada, for instance, because it's cheaper for them to bring it in from there than it is to process the tires here in Oregon. It all comes down to economics, really.
Go ahead.
I know. It's just more expensive to prepare the tires and to use them for a good use, like recycling, than it is to chip them and bury them. And unless there's a big subsidy in the system, or unless there's a ban placed on the burial of chipped tires, it's going to be very difficult to establish these alternative uses.
Representative Greenland.
Can I explore the West Nile question just a bit? Is the issue that when you have a whole tire, a non-chipped tire, it gathers water and that's a mosquito breeding place? Is that the issue?
Mr. Chair, Representative Greenland, correct.
I follow you.
Well,
What proportion of the mosquito breeding environment is in tires?
Mr. Chair, I don't know.
I mean, is it a huge problem, or is it?
Tires and mosquitoes?
Yeah.
Maybe there'd be somebody better from, the Department of Health Services or something. I just know that in the meetings that our people have attended over the last 6 months about West Nile virus, the whole energy of the state is going to try to address habitat. And tires are one thing that we thought we could help in that whole big issue. Now, what part, how, if we'll help anything or if we'll, you know, cut down on West Nile tires because of doing this, I don't know. But it's, I know the state is really wants to look at habitat.
One brief follow-up. And if they're ground up, that takes care of that problem. Is that right?
Even chipped, Representative Greenlee, because they don't hold the water.
Yeah, no, that's what I mean. If they're chipped, that takes care of it.
Representative Mabry.
Just a curiosity question. Some vague memory back here says that they were trying to use chipped tires as a part of a material to build roadways, and then a few years ago a road caught on fire and they couldn't put it out. Is that a correct assumption, or do you know? And maybe that's an unfair question to ask.
Mr. Chair, Representative Mabry. Well, I don't think those two are related. The fire had to do with using chipped tires as road base to put it put under in place of gravel to put under the road like a fill, and that's where the tire came from. The fire came from. I'm sorry, but they have in the past used chipped tires in highways, and I think has been pretty successful. Again, it's a matter of cost.
Any other questions? Thank you, sir. Doug Riggs, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Doug Riggs with PacWest Communications, here today representing Metro. I also do some work for the Central Oregon Cities, which also have an interest in this. Let me just start out by saying that usually when one of my bills comes up before a committee, especially this early in the session, I'm overjoyed. I can't quite say that about today's situation. But I did want to say two things. Number one, I appreciate the chairman giving me a heads up about this last week. This is a difficult issue, and certainly the programs that we were talking about, as you could see from our previous witness, are important. The state police has an important role in our safety on the roads. Investigations of a variety of capacities, and certainly the war on terrorism is something that we all care about. So I understand the position that you are all in, and you're desperately trying to find funding for a variety of very important programs, so I appreciate the difficulty that you're facing. Let me just spend a moment discussing very briefly why we're here today. As you may recall, and for the new members of the committee, we had a bill at the beginning of last session which would have reinstituted the tire recycling program that sunset in 1992. And there was a concern among Metro and the other counties and state agencies that enforce waste dumping issues that we're seeing an increase in dumping of illegal tires. We're seeing certainly the West Nile virus has been referred to as a concern. And we're also seeing a reduction in recycling efforts of used scrap tires. The recycling rate for scrap tires has gone from approximately 92% down to about 32% in the last 7 or 8 years. So our efforts to recycle have fallen dramatically. Instead of actually implementing a program last session, the Transportation Committee, on which Chair Brown sat, instead set up a task force, and I am usually a skeptic of task forces, but I will say that the group of people who were appointed and worked diligently throughout the interim did an outstanding job of compiling material and information that we just did not have our hands on last session. We had a group of about 15 or 17 very knowledgeable people from the private sector, from government, from across the country, people who flew in from Washington, D.C. for these meetings on a regular basis. And you have a copy in front of you of the task force report. It recommended three things. One was using the additional revenue that was left over from the previous program, which is what we're talking about today. The second item was creating a state board, and the third item was setting up goals and a potential funding source down the road. Obviously, we're dealing with 2038, which was the utilization of the existing resources in this bill here. But I wanted to point out that to Representative Zahner, that your question was right on point. The problem that we identified in the interim was one of focus. Once the fund went away and some of the underlying goals of the tire recycling program disappeared, we lost the ability to steer and encourage development of new markets. And so as a result, when the tire fuel market at the Potlatch facility in Idaho went away in the mid-1990s, there wasn't any group of people in the state who was saying, aha, we have a problem. Houston, we have a problem. We have to fix that by working on some other market type of approaches. And so the approach that the task force took was to set up a voluntary task force made up of knowledgeable individuals from throughout the state, utilize the resources of DEQ and ODOT to try to focus a little more attention on this issue, and then set recovery goals to try to increase that recycling market to a higher percentage. And if that did not occur, then we would come back with a recommendation of a landfill fee rather than a tire fee, but a landfill fee on disposal of these materials, because that's the ultimate goal, is to keep it out of the landfill. So it's a little bit long-winded explanation of what happened, and I can go into more detail if you'd like during the question and answer. So in conclusion, I guess I just wanted to say I understand the difficulty you're facing. I appreciate the chair's willingness to notify us ahead of time. We want to work with the committee to ensure that tire recycling continues to be on the radar screen, if not using this fund, maybe in another way down the road. And so with those comments, I conclude and appreciate your support.
Thank you, Doug. Just to comment, you know, this amendment actually is an addition onto the bill. The fund will still be there, and it will be directed in the same the container's there, but the container will be somewhat emptier. But the original bill was to be referred to Ways and Means also, so it's following the same route. Yeah.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Recycling has dropped in those tires. Why, they don't find a market for the floor mats and the other things. Why did people stop doing that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Zahner, the task force spent quite a bit of time on this, and we found out, we uncovered some material information that we didn't know earlier. A previous witness mentioned the fact that Oregon is a net importer of tires and rubber materials to be recycled or disposed. And that was something we weren't aware of. If you look at the recycling number, approximately 30 to 32% of the tires that are in state at any particular time are recycled. Unfortunately, that's only about, it's only the beginning of the story. The 30% roughly equals, and the numbers are in the report, but it roughly equals the creation of tires from disposal of tires from Oregon vehicles annually. The problem that we're facing is that, as the earlier witness mentioned, Oregon is importing a significant number of tires. We've been importing from California. We've been importing from Idaho. We import from Washington State. And we also import from British Columbia. And if you really look at it, a large part of the problem is that we're bringing in tires. The McMinnville facility is bringing in tires from British Columbia, using that material to produce products, which they do have a small market for, or significant market for. But there's no incentive for them to use Oregon tires. And the committee, or the task force, believe very strongly that given a few additional market incentives, given some clear oversight, given some better state leadership on this, and some focus on the legislative intent, we might be able to rectify that and make some improvements.
Follow up. Is the reason we take the tires for money? Is that why we're doing it?
Well, there's a significant subsidy that is offered by a number of the other states and provinces that create used tires. Turned out that 35 states have tire recycling programs. Oregon was actually one of the first to implement it, Mr. Chairman, representing his honor. But that program sunset, and in the meantime, other states have imposed a tire recycling program. Canada has been among the leaders. We had extensive discussion about the Alberta program that's in effect. They subsidize, if I recall correctly, and I can get you the data, transportation as well as the disposal of the material and the cost of the material itself. And so it's less expensive for, I think it's RB, rubber manufacturing, in McMinnville that you referred to. It's less expensive for them to import BC scrap tire material than it would be to import scrap tire material from Bend or from John Day.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to visit with you later, though, Doug, on this.
Thank you. Any other questions, Doug? Thank you, Doug. Is there anyone else that would like to testify on this bill? Hearing none, we'll close the public hearing and open the work session. Is there a motion?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilman.
I move that pass 2038 with amendments to the floor, or don't, to Ways and Means with a due pass.
Do we have to move the dash ones first or what?
No, we're not going to have the dash one, just the dash twos.
If you want to move the amendment first.
Dash twos. Okay, could I have a motion to add the dash two amendments to the...
Yes, I thought I did that. Okay. Yeah, I would like to add the amendments for sure. And then, and just my clarification then, this is really not a gut and stuff. This is stuff.
Right. Okay. Representative Gilman moves the dash two amendments to House Bill 2038. Is there any discussion?
Just real quick, okay. Mr. Chair. I certainly don't want to vote against state police. I would be more comfortable if we were looking at the 40 figure and the 40,000 and leaving a little money in there voting on a due pass recommendation. I don't think it's going to change my vote necessarily, but I do want to get that in there that I do have some concerns.
Representative Gilman.
1987, I voted for this dollar a tire, and I took some heat for it when I went back to my district. I still think it was a good thing. I think it was an excellent program, and we did clean up a bunch of tiles, piles of tires. The $650,000 that's left in this account, as far as I'm concerned, if we can keep 63 and state police out there, that's a good use, and I'll be happy to defend it in my district.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'd like to just follow up a little on what the Vice Chair Byer said in terms of the relationship between this and the Speaker's recommendation. And I think I heard you say, since this is going to Ways and Means, they'll put it together. And I think, in my mind, it's clearly intended to not be to add this in addition to what the Speaker is proposing, but to help her find or help Ways and... Well, it's not going to Ways... Ways and Means. Her proposal is being handled by the Special Budget Committee, dealing with 2001, 2003. I wonder whether this should have a referral to that committee rather than to Ways and Means so it can be integrated. I think we do not want this to go independent. While I certainly concerned about the state police, I hear just as many people saying the safety of our children is equally important and other things. So, I mean, I support what Speaker Minnis is doing, and I would like this to help that happen if that can happen.
And I raised that question with the majority leader and with the Speaker, and they asked me to refer it to the...
Two Ways and Means.
Two Ways and Means, and they will address it there. And
fine.
And what that process is, along with the Budget Committee there, I'm not okay. That sure, but I'm sure that will be worked out.
That's
Representative Mabry?
I just would like to say it, and I didn't hear Was it Danko? Did I say the name right? I didn't hear you speaking against the proposal, just clarifying the need and use for that money, and that should not be downplayed at all. I think it's very good. However, at the same time, representing what Representative Brown has indicated, this does not end the program. It just leaves a container somewhat less full than it should be, or than it could be. And I think we've got a real crisis with our OSP right now. I think buying this additional time to try to shore up a source of revenue to help fund OSP is vital. We got families and people that are laid off right now that we could probably salvage, and so I see this as being a real critical part. But I wanted you to know that I didn't take lightly your comments and the needs for these kind of programs.
Thank you. Any other comments? Ryan, call the roll on, and this is on the motion to dash two to the bill.
Representative Greenway.
Aye.
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Excuse.
Representative Gilman.
Yeah, aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Dash two amendments have been approved. A motion now to send House Bill 2038 to the Ways and Means.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Zahner.
I make a motion we move 2038 to Ways and Means.
As amended?
As amended.
Representative Zahner makes a motion that we send House Bill 2038 as amendment to the Ways and Means Committee with a do pass recommendation.
Yeah, I didn't know we need them in Ways and Means, but okay.
Is there any further discussion? I would just add to the comments that we've already heard this morning that back in 1987, as a tire dealer, the industry was very supportive of itself was supportive of the dollar per tire. We realized we had a horrendous problem that we were a part of and wanted to get those tires cleaned up. And we supported it, and the department, it was the fee was sunsetted, and the Department of Environmental Quality did a very good job in accomplishing what we hoped would be accomplished with those dollars at that time. I realize that recycling of tires is an important project and a thing that we need to do. I have some concerns when the biggest culprit is the tires that we're importing imported into our state. If I remember right, some of the testimony I heard, it was close to two-thirds of the junk tires originate outside our state.
Maybe we need to hear that one and see if we can find some remedy to deal with.
And with that, Ryan, will you call the roll, please?
Representative Mabry.
Aye.
Representative Zahner.
Aye.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Dingfelder.
Excuse.
Representative Gilman.
Aye.
Representative Greenland.
Aye.
Chair Brown.
Aye. Motion carries. Thank you, Commissioner. Appreciate it very much.
Want some more coffee?
Please. I think we're... Okay, didn't the...
we don't have the...
Should we carry the other bill over? Okay, committee, I think the sponsor of the bill that we had, other bill we had on here, 2384, is not here, so we'll carry that bill over to the next next hearing, next meeting.
Is that Kelly?
Is there any other discussion or committee action we need?
Is there something we could hear on the fact that those tires are coming in without fee?
I think that there's some other measures that are going to...
We'll come on that.
Yes.
That's weird.
So we're going to carry this over till... Friday?
Friday, yeah.
Mr. Chair, there were two other bills that were drafted at the request of the task force. Those did not come to; those were not referred to this committee.
Yeah, somewhere else.
Okay. Is any other business? If not, we'll stand adjourned.